Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast.
Hello, this is Beth Sechrist, and I'm joined for a conversation today with Emeritus Professor at Ohio State University and Research Director for the Ohio Digital Bookshelf Project at OhioLINK and the Ohio Board of Regents, Steve Acker. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
How are the open educational resources that you've developed in the project making a difference for community college students in Ohio?
Well, let me just step back a moment and say that these resources are built up the math ladder. The name of the project is Ohio's Scaffold to the Stars. So in essence, our goal and desire is to provide a ladder for Ohio students to succeed in math. What keeps me up at night is the image of the 90% of students who fail to earn credit in math at a community college if they begin a developmental class three levels down. So that suggests to me that we need safety ladders. So what we've done is built a series of content modules that are open educational resources, each of them associated with a competency in mathematics that is then tied to a top level. And that platform is applied statics. Statics is the first course in applied engineering programs. So the basic idea is let's provide a way for students to go forward in what they know about math, look back if they're having some weaknesses, and always have in mind a place that they will be able to apply them or use them, which is an engineering background. So in essence, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to provide an applied and theoretic exposure to math for Ohio students.
I see. What are some of the lessons you've learned through analysis of the use of the open educational resources in Scaffold to the Stars, or in other ways, about the aspects of open educational resources that are especially important in helping community college students succeed?
I guess I would, Betsy, answer that question by starting with the observation that community college students represent a huge diversity. They're not a traditional set of individuals with common learning styles, common life experiences, common stages in their careers. So the idea that seems to us to be most important is that we can provide a diverse set of learning materials that can be freely provided to these students so that they have access to different ways of mastering mathematics. The reason that OER, Open Educational Resources, is important for this characteristic is because if I have purchased a textbook, I can't expect a student to go beyond that textbook to find additional resources unless they're supplemental and free. On the other hand, if my faculty member is prepared to offer this array or repertoire or library of resources that have no cost associated with them, I think then I'm in a position, and the faculty members in a position, and the institution's in a position to say to the student, here's a buffet, here's an opportunity, a chance to learn math your way. My job as a faculty member is now is to put the context around those materials so that we have a common understanding. But you're going to have a video, you're going to have a podcast, you're going to have writing in a particular style that finally meets your needs, and that's in essence what we're hoping to do.
We've heard that your collaboration grew to include as many as 6 community colleges in Ohio, some of whom had not originally been part of the planning. What was the secret of your success in attracting new institutions to take part?
Happy to say we have 7, not 6.
7.
Oh. Yep. The secret to the success is no secret at all. It's using the networks of connected peers such that a faculty person from Lakeland Community College talks to a faculty member at Southern State Community College, and that credibility associated with that faculty person and their relationship is what allows an innovation to spread. We try and do our best in terms of cultivating upper administration so that they're receptive to these ideas, so that if a faculty person goes to their dean or goes to a provost, they have a sense of receptivity. It's not brand new to them. It's somewhat radical for a lot of administrators in higher education to think about free. Mm-hmm. And what we try and do is say, this is what free means. And if someone comes to you with a desire and a passion to use these on behalf of their students, we'd hope that you'd be able to support that idea.
How have you gotten faculty members involved in using the OER materials that have been developed in your project with their classes?
Three ways. Number one, we provided innovation honoraria. In other words, we said we recognize that any change takes additional time, effort, energy, and we're prepared to pay you a small honorarium if you will participate with us. On that particular leg of our commitment process, we also say, if you'll try it more than once, we'll continue that innovation honoraria. I mean, all of us as faculty members stumble in some way in our first effort, and it's very important to us that you don't disengage and stop, but that you have many reasons, but this is another, a financial reason to continue on for a second time. And we're interested in how this changes, if your success with these materials changes in the second term. And this is reasonable, right? If you take a new textbook of any kind, you get better with it, you know where the pitfalls are and the promises, and you can use that to make your teaching experience more effective. Number two, faculty, when they select a textbook, are provided lots of resources in the traditional adoption model. There are a number of agents from the different publishing companies that come by and present the ideas and so forth. So we thought it important that we do two things. Number one, that we find a librarian who is skilled in going out to resource land, the internet, and identifying a credible set of resources to teach different competencies. So just like the good old days of being a faculty member when you did have a pathfinder, a librarian, to come to your office and say, I hear you're teaching visual communication. Mm-hmm. Look at what's new in visual communication. Our librarians go and they find these resources. They sit down with the faculty person and they help build a custom syllabus with the faculty person. So the faculty person says, these are the 15 things I teach in this order. The librarian says, well, here are 75 resources that address those 15 things. Pick them. And then we put them in place. So that's really critical because the capacity to make this adoption shouldn't take a million amount of time. You ought to start with something, and that something is a relationship with a librarian.
Oh, wonderful.
And third, we have end-of-term meetings among our faculty. So these faculty, it's not a faculty development resource workshop. It's a faculty sharing workshop. And each of the faculty say, here's what I've learned that works. Don't ever try this. It'll kill you. The students don't like that. They do like this. Make sure it's practical. Have your solutions available. Work backwards from solutions. So those are the three things: financial incentive, support in building custom resources, and exchange among faculty.
How do issues of accessibility play into the creation and sustaining of open educational resources?
So one of the wonderful things about Scaffold to the Stars is that because these resources are modular and based on specific learning objectives, I can build multiple pathways or curricula to meet the specific set of needs. So Scaffold can do two things. It can build a curricula appropriate for all students. It can build a second curricula appropriate for all students who have a print disability. Mm-hmm. And consequently, there's this ability for the faculty person to meet their ethical, legal, and essential desire to provide universal access to their materials by building these parallel trees of materials. Mm-hmm. The related point that we think is important is that in the world of open educational resources, many of the large, well-organized providers of open educational resources, such as Flatworld, such as OpenStax, have made a commitment to accessibility, and their materials in general are accessible. However, many, many typical faculty members who have contributed resources really don't understand and know the accessibility agenda. Mm-hmm. So it's a teaching tool in a sense because part of our metadata, is this resource accessible or not? Mm-hmm. If not, the faculty person has an opportunity to begin engaging with this, gosh, I better come up with an alternative way, equal effort, equal outcome associated with meeting that expectation.
Just following up on that, the faculty experience with rethinking that in accessibility. I'm just curious if you have an interesting story with perhaps how that's helped them rethink a way of presenting the material for people who perhaps even aren't print disabled.
Exactly. You see, that's precisely it. This idea of universal design for learning. A print disability is just being on an extreme pole in terms of a particular learning style, if you will. So we have resources which are video-based, text-based, audio-based, and as a faculty member, when you understand the particular needs of a population of Sprint disabled, you begin to visualize and understand your subject matter and the ways in which you can communicate it in a much richer and broader way. And that's fabulous.
Thank you so much for your time today. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Only that this project, Ohio Scaffold of the Scars, was a Next Generation Learning Challenge project. Mm-hmm. And NGLC, in my view, is more about building community than it is about anything else. And I believe we've tried to emulate that in Scaffold to the Stars. Because the success of the innovation, we're going to make some big steps, and then we're going to fall back. And we're going to hopefully get ourselves up and take another set of steps. But if we don't have that community support, someone to call, someone to talk to, someone to say that it will get better when it's not better, mm-hmm. someone to celebrate your successes, it could die. Open education resources is innovation that must succeed.
Have you seen how building that community just within the context of this part has helped build or make connections with other kinds of communities? Because as you said, NGLC, it's all about building community. I think that's true for everything that's going on here.
Yeah. We build snowballing sociograms. Now, isn't that a fabulous phrase?
I haven't heard it before.
No, you haven't. So a sociogram is a visual representation of community. Who talks to whom mm-hmm. and how often and right. in which mm-hmm. directions. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the snowballing sociogram is, so we have a community of math faculty who live here in this sociogram. We have another community of accessibility experts who live here. We have NGLC that lives here. And what we need to do is to connect. So I have relationships in these multiple communities. Other people do too. So we inform each other. And that's this idea of a snowball. You start small. You get rolling down the hill. You all come together, and you get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And if it works, you know, if the heat's not too high and you melt,
right.
you actually bring about change. And that's what this transforming higher education is so much about.
Well, and you do bring up a good point, though. Where have you felt heat?
Oh, yeah. No, that is a good question. The heat's in many, many places. I mean, change brings out skeptics. Mm-hmm. And we're proud of our successes, and we're aware that we also have failures. And when a failure occurs, if for some reason we don't get a good adoption or we have a bad experience on behalf of students with a particular learning environment, that becomes a data point which says, well, you see, we shouldn't change. This has always worked for us in the past. And one of the pluses and minuses of math as a place to start, in addition to being critical in terms of mastery, Carl Stitz, one of our lead faculty who's written one of the core open education resources, is, you know, math hasn't changed in over 150 years. Why do I have to keep getting a new book every 2.5 years? I think I'll write my own, and we'll use it into the future. But that challenges the beliefs of other faculty who say, no, we really do need this updated book with a different set of graphics or whatever it happens to be, a learning aid. And those kinds of conversations, you know, heat comes from friction. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of frictions that we find.
Well, and that's when you were talking about, you know, the one of the aspects of your program where the faculty get together and talk and share. We even know as teachers that, you know, the personality of classes differ.
Absolutely. So that's a great example. Another one of our issues. So our data become persuasive at aggregate levels. We have more than 1,000 students in Scaffold to the Stars. The challenge is, as important as I feel and many other people feel that OER is to the educational experience, the faculty is still the major individual. That faculty has a different class that comes through every term. So what's leading to positive or negative outcomes? Is it the individual faculty? Is it that cohort of students at the time? Or is it the OER? And the answer is it's all three. And truthfully, of the three, the content is the least important of those three things. So we have to be careful to stay the course, because we need to gather more and more and more data to fully support the importance of OER. We know that affordability is the number one reason that students drop out of community colleges. So we're on very firm ground in terms of addressing the affordability agenda. The learning outcomes agenda is contested because of the fact that education is a multivariate process.
Well, thank you very much.
It was my great pleasure. Thank you for being here with me.